Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Mark Boerichter, always here very early to listen to the show. Were you entertained by anything you were listening to? I saw you laughing back there, so hopefully that was because of the show. And
I don't know, it's probably Jake and I talking about something else.
Probably. He puts on his own show back there, doesn't he?
It's the show before the show.
It is the show before the show.
A little prep work.
Mark Boerichter.
Stephen St. John. Nate Buchanan. What's up, Nate?
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Looking into some flight options for the 13th. Looks like I can handle it.
All right, is that the day?
If we're really locking this in.
We need to move off the 13th now. I don't know if it's going to work. It's a big day for me.
How about the 14th?
Son of a gun, you.
Well, I can't do the 12th, I'll tell you that.
7:43 p.m. flight, direct to LaGuardia. I could hang out with you guys, straight to the airport.
Looks like 14th is the day.
Yep.
Friday night at the ballpark.
You want a part of this thing?
I'm in on the 13th. Mm-hmm. I can't do the 12th. I'll be returning from Vegas on the 12th.
Oh, boy. You need a day of
recovery. It won't be a crazy trip to Vegas. I don't know if this is public knowledge, but it is now. But
nobody's listening. Don't worry about it, Mark.
My father, Dr. Bob Boerichter, is getting inducted into the NACTA Hall of Fame.
Congratulations to him.
Congratulations.
So, for those that don't know, it's the National Association of Collegiate Athletic Directors.
Where is that based out of?
I don't know where they're based out of, but the convention's in Vegas.
Nice.
That weekend. So, I'm headed out there for that. So, but I return on the 12th, the evening of the 12th. So the 13th would work. That's what I'm saying. I would also be available most likely the 14th, should we choose to leave Nate out of this whole thing.
That's a possibility.
It wouldn't be very nice, would it?
We got to do.
Yeah, it would be on brand.
Just because it's not very nice doesn't mean we wouldn't do it.
It wouldn't be a shocker.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's play a little game called Andy Reid Speaks, Mark Boerichter Reacts.
Okay.
You ready for that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, you razor sharp. You ready today? Let's hear Andy Reid, Big Red, who spoke to the media about some of these rookies that were on display at rookie minicamp. And, oh, by the way, did you see the long and lean former wide receiver that was walking around apparently coaching?
Hard to miss.
And, again, tremendous ability to find the camera lens.
Really impressive.
Gary Dieter out
Elite.
There helping coaching some of the rookies. And so, a round of applause from the studio audience, even though he's not here. We can still applaud for a member of the Border Patrol.
Well, I only have one question, really. What? Like, did he show up on time?
Well, he,
wow.
I don't know.
Ooh.
Wow. Boy, if he's listening, he should be a red.
Thing I like about a Mark Boerichter, that's got a level ability to find a camera. Not
Mark
necessarily.
Why, yeah,
Mark
why'd you throw my name?
Yeah, why did I give you? I was
come
man.
On.
I thought
no,
you were about to say a guy who like to show up on time.
Yeah, on time.
No, screw that up.
God darn it! I was in my Mel Kiper voice.
Boerichter,
that was a disaster.
He likes about Derek Dieter.
Sounds like June 14th.
Got a propensity to cuss. Got a propensity to cuss on a microphone. June 14th.
It sounds like June 14th.
Oh, delayed reaction. I got I was like it hit the balls. I didn't get it right away. They're like, ooh. I laughed. That was funny.
You got me right away.
Yeah. I've got so many things going on. And now the Lebo walks in here. I'm trying to yell at him, and he ignores me.
Of course,
that's fine.
I think we know when Gary Dieter actually cares about something. He had a chance to show up on time.
Was he? I don't know.
Yeah.
Are you confirming that?
Well, maybe he left early, too. He does that as well. We know that.
Damn. Let's hear Big Red Andy Reid talk about Xavier Worthy and what he thought over the weekend.
I thought he did a nice job picking things up and working through. We asked him to do a whole lot of stuff there. He was putting most of the primary spots, so it was good for him to get in there and move around a little bit.
Does he be picking up stuff okay so far?
Yeah, sharp kid. Yeah.
That's kind of part of what this weekend's about, right? Giving these guys more than they maybe can handle and see what they can do.
Yeah, sure. And then you wait for see how they retain it when they come back. And then things obviously are even a little faster when you get back in here.
Oh, I'm supposed to react, right?
Sure, react.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I don't expect him to say anything different.
Right.
Just because, like, here's the thing, like, rookie minicamp is just, it's, everybody's swimming, right, out there. Mm-hmm. Because
they're drinking from a fire hose.
They're drinking more, yeah. You're thrown into this with all new terminology, expected to pick it up as fast as you possibly can. It's a test. Obviously, there's a lot of guys out there that aren't under contract, right? They were invited to this rookie minicamp. They're out there to try to show their abilities on things. You don't have the, you know, they have enough guys to be able to conduct practices and things, but it's more about just learning how to do things, what the terminology of the offense looks like. But I think the one thing, and you know, Andy doesn't say a lot, right, on a lot of cases, but I don't expect him to say anything but positive things about all their draft picks and the guys that were out there. But he did hit on one key point, though. That is the retention, right, for these guys. Like,
which you won't know until they come back.
Right, but you can start to pick up on whether guys are serious about this, okay, overnight when they're looking at install things and are they retaining it for the next day. Yeah, those guys are all going to go out and make physical mistakes or maybe run a wrong route or, you know, different things as this happens early on. But that's the time for this now, for that to happen.
After one rough practice, is it too early to call anyone a bust?
No.
So Andy said he did a nice job picking things up, like the punts he dropped.
Wow.
Pick those up.
Boy, oh,
I mean,
boy.
I'm in a roast mood. You know, we've been watching
rough
this roast
crowd.
Now that doesn't matter, does it? The fact that he dropped a couple of punts on the first day, or do we care about that?
I don't. Not now.
Yeah,
it's the first part of May.
Right.
Tell him.
I don't care. I'm just making people. I don't know what we're talking about.
Was it off the foot of an actual punter or from a jugs machine?
Good question.
Because I haven't seen a jugs machine punt in the last 20 years.
They had like four punters out there, so I imagine they actually had guys punting.
Rolling them through?
Yeah.
I don't want him returning punts anyway, do I?
They went out of their way to say that he's a returner. That's one thing that stood out to me post-pick press conferences.
Right away.
Brett Veach, Andy Reid, they all said they went out of the way to mention him as a returner.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, that seems like for a guy his size, that does that mean less time as a receiver in his rookie year? Or maybe he's not. We shouldn't expect him to play all the time as a rookie receiver.
I don't know. Here's the thing. I'll say this. Like, the expectations on him because he's a first-round pick are going to be higher than what he'll ever meet, most likely, okay, on stuff. And the reason for that, and that's because of where he got picked. But what Rashee Rice did in this offense last year hadn't been done in the Andy Reid offense as a rookie.
Right.
Right? So production-wise.
You're saying the expectations for him in his rookie year.
Yes, yes.
But can he achieve those first-round expectations as time goes on?
I'll say no, because most guys don't. That's a fair statement to say.
So you're saying he probably won't.
Yeah, I'm saying
probably. But not that he can't.
No, I'm not saying not that he can't. I'm just saying the odds are that he won't, because that's just the nature of the National Football League and the draft.
Yeah.
But I would fully expect to see him back there given an opportunity to return punts.
I think he's going to be a beast. Maybe not rookie year. I don't know. I think he's going to be a stud.
Time will tell.
It's a good question, though.
I'm not saying he's not going to be. That's not what I'm trying to get at.
We've just talked about, like, guys, do you want the guy, if he's returning punts, does that mean less reps at wide receiver?
Why should it, though?
I don't know.
When you're 160 pounds or whatever he is.
He's 175,
man.
But how many punts can he return in a game?
Not six foot.
That's what he's listed at.
Yeah, well, he's not.
That's my point.
It seems like that's a guy they want to get the ball in his hands as much as possible, and that's...
Yeah, I think so.
Are you opposed to him being a...
I'm not opposed to anything.
Guy?
I'm not opposed to anything with him. I don't... Again, I'm on the record of saying this. Like, I did not hate the pick. I don't necessarily love it on that side of things. But all the physical tools are there outside of his size. right? Like that's where my biggest red flag on him is his size.
I mean, the way I look at it, you're not picking a gimmick player in the first round. If you're worried about his size that much, you should have taken him in the first round.
Right. Correct.
I mean, they
clearly feel comfortable with that.
He played at Texas, and he played a lot.
Yeah.
And
I think the one thing
that's big guys that play against Texas.
Here's the one major difference for him than other guys that, you know, we've gone down the list of receivers before, right, that ran extremely fast at the combine. You know, the John Rosses of the world, those types of guys that didn't do anything after that. The difference with Xavier Worthy is that he was productive as a freshman at Texas. He was productive early.
He was most productive as a freshman.
Yeah, he was productive early. So it wasn't like he just came onto the scene 1 year. Is where I'm going with that. Okay, that is a major difference. Again, I'm still concerned about his size.
Yeah.
But that is a major difference to me. With a guy that runs as fast as he does and his size, because he was productive early in his career at Texas too.
That's where I come from too, because like the Raiders always were known for taking the sprinter, you know, the guy that can run really fast in a straight line. And a lot of times those guys didn't really end up being much as wide receivers. I feel like this kid's a lot. Everybody's so hung up on his 40 time that they think that's all he is. He's a guy that runs a really fast 40. But I feel like when you watch him, he's got really good lateral quickness. He'd be great at a game of tag. That's kind of what like we'd say about Tyreek Hill. The thing that was amazing about what Tyreek was powerful too, but Tyreek could run really fast in a straight line. He was also, if you played a game of tag with him, you wouldn't touch him, you know? And I think that makes guys, like, get separation when it comes to the other routes that you would run. I mean, Dick Vermeil was the one that said to me, I remember this a lot, like, back when he got to the Chiefs. He's like, yeah, everybody likes the big receivers because they say they can catch a ball in a crowd, but that's usually because they're in a crowd. I'd rather have the smaller guy that can actually get open. And I mean, I feel like...
Is that why I was only here for 4 years?
See?
Wow. I mean, you're looking right at him and saying that.
Yeah,
you're insulting him. You're insulting the man.
I'm talking about a guy that caught a 99-yard touchdown pass. Seems to me like he's better than just catching a ball in a crowd.
I know. I don't like... Here's what I don't want. I don't want the comparisons to Tyreek Hill and Xavier Worthy.
Right, he's not the same guy, of course.
They're not the same body type. They're not... Yeah. I mean, neither one of them are very tall, but Tyreek's a different animal.
Deshaun Jackson's the one that people try to compare him to.
Yeah, yeah. And that's probably more of a fair comparison on things. There are a lot of things that he can do for this offense, right? Like, that's what I'm interested to see of how they're going to utilize him in this piece. You know, because to me, you signed Hollywood Brown, right, on things. For which was way more affordable, and we've talked about this, than I thought it was ever going to be. I think than any of us thought, based on projections of that. But he and Xavier Worthy are kind of the same guy. Now, Hollywood Brown's only on a one-year deal here, right, on things. So, and I realize this isn't like me saying they hedged their bet on the Hollywood Brown signing by taking Xavier Worthy in the first round, because you're getting him on a rookie contract for up to 5 years now. 4 years, technically, on that rookie contract with the fifth-year option. But, it's going to be interesting how they use those guys, because there's a definite type. You just talked about the different. There's a definite type right now on this team. They don't have a whole lot of size at the receiver position at all.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of shorter guys, a lot of short, fast guys. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that's the type of guy they have right now.
So,
that size of tight end.
The guy I think about is I heard all these people just wringing their hands over Devontae Smith and his weight when he came out of college. And he won a Heisman Trophy. And he was incredible for people that, you know, I know people get mad about SEC football. When you're playing SEC football, you're going against NFL-caliber defenses
every
week. And his junior season, sophomore season, 42 catches. Junior season, 68 catches. His senior season, 117 catches for almost 1,900 yards, right? Do you know how much he weighed?
Not very much.
Buck 70?
Right here. This is in 2021, right before he's drafted. Alabama receiver Devontae Smith answered one of the biggest scouting questions surrounding Alabama's pro day scheduled for Tuesday without even stepping on the field. He revealed his weight Monday, 170 pounds, and said he will not participate in the pro day other than to let NFL scouts verify that number with a weigh-in. 170 pounds, and he's listed anywhere from 6 foot to 6 foot one, and he does look skinny. But do you remember that? Whenever 170, he's going to get destroyed in the NFL. He's been okay, hasn't he? And so I think it's a reasonable comparison.
That's a reasonable comparison. Again, some of these guys are outliers too, right, on that piece. But I'm just saying, I'm not saying Xavier Worthy's going to get destroyed out there either on things. That's why I say I'm interested to see how they're going to utilize it on stuff.
I think the point is, he wasn't a gadget player at Texas.
No, that's where I go back to. Right. Yeah, he was productive at Texas early on too with stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Because
this receiving core, okay, you added Hollywood Brown in the offseason.
Yeah.
You obviously added Xavier Worthy. You're probably still searching for maybe another veteran guy in there at some point.
They should be.
And then you've got, how long is the suspension going to be for Rashee Rice?
Oh,
right?
Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. We don't know. So
who knows on that one?
So who knows? But you don't know how long that's going to be. So there's going to be probably a couple filling guys and veteran guys. You know, you've seen a few signings here over the last week after the draft. Now you'll start to pick up these other veteran guys on 1 year, you know, cheaper deals.
Why don't we take a nice break? Lebo, I've got a live read that I need to talk to you for once. Business. Me and you got business. All right? But we'll take a break. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're talking about these wide receivers. I know Scott Carroll was listening, had a good question, but I'm just going to say this. Look, a lot of times we seem to want to put the cart before the horse and try to jump ahead, rush to judgment, whatever. We need to slow our roll on Rashee Rice about when he's coming back. We don't know. You know, that was a serious thing that he went through. The NFL has not made their decision because they have to wait for the legal process. And also another important aspect of this, Rashee Rice has to stay out of trouble.
Right. Yeah.
One thing we've all talked about is for sure is if he gets a second chance, it's because he doesn't do anything else. You know, once you mess up like this, okay, learn from it. Don't make another mistake. And so that's got to be on him. And you just can't assume anything anymore in this world. But I would just caution people, don't be so quick to, you know, who do you know? Does anyone know how long Rashee Rice is going to be out?
I know, who was it, James Palmer? Was it James Palmer that put something out?
He's on a podcast.
Like last week or something, they're expecting him to miss half the year. I don't know. From that situation, you know, is it going to be six games? Is it going to be four? Again, when you look at the legal process, does he end up pleading down out of something? You know, like, who the heck knows?
Point is, Xavier Worthy,
you just don't know.
He's going to have to play a lot
early
on. And I still think that the door could be open to add a veteran wide receiver.
I think that's there. Don't forget Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney are still on this team, right? We've talked about that.
I haven't forgotten.
So. Just a gentle
reminder.
He was
trying to, and
you won't let me.
Throw that right back in his face.
Don't get me wrong. I'd love it if Sky Moore came out and was productive.
No, absolutely. I think we all would.
I'd love it all, but I mean, what are you going to bet on here?
Yeah.
You know,
we all would love if they are.
So, what was the question that a loyal listener, Scott Carroll, texted in with?
So, Scotty sent me a text. He said, "I'm listening right now in the car. Love the show."
Wow.
He said, "Ask Mark what makes Andy's offense so difficult for new guys and wide receivers. I'm just really curious."
I think it's when you look at it is a West Coast offense, okay? The foundations of it are from the West Coast offense, and it's been bastardized over time, like most offenses on things, but it's very wordy. And when you look at the transition from college to the National Football League, you know, this is changing a little bit now, and I would expect this might change even more so now this year with the ability for coaches to communicate with quarterbacks on the sideline in the NCAA on things. But you see so many of, like, the plays are being called from the sideline, right, in an up-tempo offense. Guys are looking to the sideline, and they're looking at the wristband, or there's, you know, a picture of Nate's face and the Oregon Duck and then, you know, Marilyn Monroe and then whatever
Fred
else,
Flintstone.
Right? Yeah, yeah, and right, and they're, one of those symbols equals the, what the play is, you know, for the player. So a lot of times it's when I talk about the verbiage of it and things, it's learning the concepts of it, but then the other big portion of that is understanding you're not hearing all of that in a play call a lot of times these days in college, depending on the style of offense you're running. So that can be a transition for them. Again, it's about the retention. I love teaching things in the conceptual side of things because everybody runs the same stuff from a concept perspective in the passing game. It's a copycat league, but everybody runs the same overall concepts. You know, whether it's a zone beater, man beater, things like that. You're trying to, they're all the same concepts. They're just called different things with different offenses and verbiage. So if you can get guys to understand, okay, what do you guys call this in college? Okay, that's what you call it. Well, this is what we call it here. It's the same play. It's the same concept. If you can get them on that page. And again, it's not that the other portion of this is there's a lot of freedom in this offense with option routes and some different things, right?
When to break your route off.
Yeah,
when
to sit down in the zone, things like that. But then the number one, the other piece to that is, number one, you got to know where you're going, right, what the route is. You got to understand what the concept is. You got to understand what you're seeing defensively.
What their coverage is.
Yeah, and then the most important piece of that is what number 15's seeing also, right, on things.
Right.
And more so in this offense.
You also have to know what the guys around you are doing so you don't.
You got to know what the guys around you are doing. And this is where I was going with this is that, like, Travis Kelce, you know, they've made no bones about it that sometimes he and Mahomes just make stuff up on the field. When I say make stuff up, they see the same thing. You know what? They've already talked about that kind of stuff. They know what potentially is going to happen there, right, on some of that. So, but Kelce can't do that. As a perfect example, you know, we had one last year, I think it was in the playoff game, where he was supposed to run a corner out, saw it was covered, and just hit the back seam of the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
He can't do that if there's another tight end running right in that seam or a guy coming across on a crosser. Like, he can't do that. So you have to understand overall what the concepts are, what the defense is doing. There are a lot of moving parts to all this.
Isn't one of the things you've said to in the past, too, is maybe in some offenses you get drafted and you're the X or you're the Y. You have one position to learn. And haven't you said that part of what you have to do with Andy Reid's offense is you're asked, you might be lining up in a different spot every time, so you have to know all of them?
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I think one thing that with young guys, it's in terms of bringing them along, a lot of times it's easier just to give them one position to learn first, right?
And then build
from
there.
And that's where they are right now, where Andy talks about when they come back, we'll see how much they retained it. Because then as you start getting a player, and not because he was a first-round pick, but because of his athletic talents with Xavier Worthy, okay, now how can we expand his role? How can we install this? You've got all summer to install this and training camp to get an understanding of the offense. You know, it varies, and this may sound crazy, but let's say you have two receivers on the right-hand side, okay, and a tight end. Well, we're going to run a route combination with those three guys. Well, maybe the next time we don't have a tight end there, but we're motioning a guy over, and now the route combination changes as to which guys are running the same route combination, but which guy's running which route, right? You have to, because you're in motion off the ball or whatever. So there's different rules and different offenses. Sometimes you're tagging that with a switch, you know, concept or whatever. When I say switch, like the switch means that the X or the Z and the Y are doing something different, right? They're switching their routes, but it doesn't affect everybody else. Like, there's all these different things that come into play when you start looking at concepts and offenses that make it difficult. Again, some of them aren't hard, but the thing is everybody learns it a different way. And part of what they're going to do through these rookie minicamps and stuff is throw a lot at these guys to see what they can handle.
So I was really glad you just brought up motion, because that was actually leading to my next follow-up for Scotty Carroll out there. I remember Daniel Jeremiah listening to his podcast last year, and he did like a little breakdown of teams that run pre-snap motion, which teams run pre-snap motion the most, and it's almost always the best offenses, and the Chiefs are at the top of the list. And his point is it does a lot of things. It gets to move defenses around. It gets it forces the defense to show you a little bit about what their coverage is, so they kind of have to show some of their cards before you snap. But I never really thought about it from this standpoint. How much more complicated does that make it as a wide receiver if there's motion going on before every snap? Does that make things more difficult?
It doesn't make it more difficult necessarily on you, but it's one more thing. If you're the guy in motion, you have to, again, when you hear the play call and these 15 to 20 words that come out in about 2 seconds, you have to deduct all that stuff in your brain and going, okay, I'm starting over here, I'm motioning here, and this is the route I'm running.
So when these guys, we see the clips or the videos of them working with Patrick Mahomes down in Texas. I mean, it is, especially for young players, it is important, right? Because you're going over a lot of these finer details that will give them a head start as they head into training camp, or will get them a little more acclimated before training camp starts, right?
Yeah, it's the more time you can have with your quarterback, with timing, with the knowledge base, the better off it's going to be. And when I say timing, like, there to delve into offense even further,
do it.
There are timing routes, right? There are throws within rhythm that need to be, you know, take your drop. It's a little different now out of the shotgun and things, but it's, you know, the quick game, everything else. It's a step back off the foot, on the back foot, and throw the ball. And if I'm running a little 5 yard out from the slot, my quarterback needs to know, you know, where he's got to throw that ball to. You know, how am I getting in and out of that break? It's a rhythm and timing throw. And so the only way you get used to guys is by having a ton of repetitions with that. And it can be against air. It doesn't have to be against defenses, but understanding what that anticipation and all that looks like.
So I feel like you can be many times a voice of reason for us on this show. And so one of the most interesting stories is going to be Louis Riz-Zamet. And so because, I mean, he is a tremendous athlete, and the Chiefs liked him for a reason, and there is a special teams aspect, but we also got to remember, you know, this is, you know.
You have the clip of him?
Yeah. We've got Andy Reid talking about him.
Okay.
A couple of clips here. Here's Andy Reid talking about the former rugby star.
This was good for him, this camp, for that reason that he got a lot of reps. When the guys are here, he's rotating in with those guys. He didn't get a ton of reps there, but this gave him an opportunity to really jump in and learn. And he's so diligent with everything and wants to be so good at everything, and that's I've appreciated that. And you can see the progress he's made. You guys saw yesterday with the long run he had so on the screen. So he's you get I thought he was going to dive in the end zone, but other than that, he was going to, that's all right.
Have you ever played rugby, club rugby, when you were young? Or do you know the game at all?
I've watched it. I haven't played it.
All right, let's play one more about Riz-Zamet adjusting.
He's done a good job of working on holding the ball. They do hold a little bit different, bigger ball, and not quite as pointy as a football. So he's done a good job with that, working that. He'll learn the pad level. The first time he gets hit, he'll be able to adjust where he's at there. But I like the fact that he's got shorter steps initially. That's a good thing as a running back. If you're a long strider in there, and you got to really work on making it through those tight adjustments that you have to make. So he seems to have a nice feel, though.
Mark Boerutter, please elaborate.
I'll just say this. I think the kid's got a lot of tools, right? Heck of an athlete. Living out his dream of something he wants to do. It's going to be difficult for him to make this team. You know, this is really the first time he's played American football.
So what about the practice squad?
Well, he's going to be here.
Because he's got to be on the practice squad.
I'll tell you, he's going to be here, and this is why. He's a part of that NFL program, international program. They get a roster exemption for him, okay? Mm-hmm. He's going to be here on the practice squad. They didn't sign him as just because he's a part of this program. There's things and tools that he has that they feel that they want to be able to try to develop him on, right, on things. So I heard his clip yesterday I think it was in the bonus hour, where he was talking about, you know, learning this and learning how to catch the ball running upfield, right, instead of laterally and different things. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. He understands, I think, this is going to take some time for him to learn this and understanding the nuances of this game. Is there some translation over to it? Absolutely there is, right? But I think everybody jumped on quick with the new kickoff rules because it looks kind of like a rugby, you know, line out there that this might be a spot for him. Yeah, we'll probably see him in the preseason out there in some one of those situations for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think he's got a good head on his shoulders to understand exactly where he's at right now with things too.
Also, something else you got to remember is, and now this could change, I guess, but the NFL granted the Chiefs their single allotted roster exemption for an international player on April 24th, but it was for offensive tackle Jason Chew-Godrick and not for Reese Zammit. Now, that only counts during the offseason. As part of the new rule in 2024, the NFL teams are allotted a 17th spot of the practice squad for international players. Those players can be elevated three times. However, no international exemption exists on the 53-man roster once the regular season begins. And so this could mean that the team feels good about him making the 53-man roster. He can also, I mean, a wide variety of things, right?
Yeah.
So that was somewhat of, somewhat of a surprise.
Yeah.
Who knows what it means?
I think he'll be here on the practice squad. That's just what my thoughts are. Unless he goes out there and just looks absolutely lost in the preseason on stuff.
Let's hear what he had to say after experiencing his first practices with the Chiefs.
You know, when I get the ball in my hand, it's pretty similar. Getting open field space, it's about how I do that. So if I'm in the backfield, the footwork, you know, I'm used to being able to pick gaps, use my awareness. Route running is obviously completely new to me. Being able to accelerate and decelerate pretty much at the same time is pretty tricky. But yeah, you know, the more reps I do, the better I'll get. And it's going to take time. It's definitely going to take time. But, you know, I'm willing to put the work in.
I think he understands where he's at, right? Like, that's where I think there's a... So, this is why I'm rooting for this guy, too. Because, again, I think we all need to be realistic of where, you know, he's probably going to end up on this team. But he seems to me like a guy that's willing to work and has a self-awareness of the stuff he's got to work on. Right? Not a lot of guys would say that. And I think, again, there's some translation within the game, but it's a different game. It's still a different game on things. So... I'm going to be interested to see how he progresses all summer and into training camp, though, for sure.
Jake, what's your prediction for him?
Practice squad. I think that'd be, I mean, look, that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. Absolutely not.
I think his projection is in two to three years, he's actually contributing. I mean, I think that would be realistic, and I think that's kind of what the Chiefs probably have in mind.
Well, you know, we've talked about with a lot of former NFL players, such as yourself, that come in here all the time, about the fact that football is a little bit of a different animal compared to some other sports because, like when should you get your kid to play start playing tackle football? A lot of people say you don't need to get them to play tackle football until they're in high school because it's really about developing the speed, the size, athleticism. You can learn the concepts. It's not like a sport like baseball is so skill-oriented. Like, you got to get a million at-bats. You got to get your kid hitting
muscle
all the time.
Muscle memory.
You know, all that stuff. Whereas football, it's a little like, does the kid want to hit? Is the kid up for the violence of it? Is the kid physical enough? You know, big, strong, fast? Those types of things. Those other things we can teach. And so that's kind of where I'm intrigued by this guy because you look at the size, speed. I mean, we talk about you as an athlete, your height, your speed, all those things. He seems to have that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, to me, if you're playing rugby at a high level, you're tough enough. Now, this is a different type of toughness because this is more of a collision sport than a physical, you know, grab people and take them to the ground sport. But can he at this stage learn those other things, you know, and can he develop the other parts of the game that he'll have to develop?
I think he can just because he's got unique physical tools.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's nothing against rugby players, but a lot of rugby players that don't have the lateral movement and physical tools that he has.
He's got some shape to him when you watch those highlights.
Yeah,
you know,
and again, it's learning how to do that because he's never had to do it. Now, where I go with this is, like, I think he's got the athletic ability when you watch him on film and some things that you're like, okay, this translates over. We can teach him how to run these routes out of the backfield. We can teach him how to do that kind of stuff. But you can't teach some of those physical tools that he's got that right. can translate into it. And so, again, like, I don't have any expectations for him whatsoever.
Right.
I think it's a great story, but I also think that when I heard that, and then, you know, there was an extended portion of that clip, too, where he was talking about, hey, I've still got to make the team here. That's my goal. You know, I've got to try to make the team here and see, hopefully, then we can talk about where I'm going to play and what I'm going to be doing, you know, type of thing. So I think he's got the right head on his shoulders, too.
We've got Mark Boerich in studio. Back into this on WHP. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Stephen St. John and... Oh, man. Nate Buchanan and Jake Gutierrez. I'm going to show you this. I'm not showing Nate this because I don't want to trigger him. Read with this.
I saw this. I saw this. Yes, I saw this. Yeah.
Does that make you laugh?
I did.
I'm not going to wind him up again.
Hold on,
he would be furious.
The big LeBron thing about the kid flopping, flopping.
Yeah.
That's all LeBron
says.
Fault.
When you grow up watching LeBron instead of Jordan, you see that? Let's see, Jay. Open your mic so you laugh, Jay. We want to hear the laughter of a child. Come on.
Well done. Hey, sold it. It's part of the game, right?
It is part of the game now. Yeah. Oh, it absolutely is.
Did we have any flops last night?
DiVincenzo, yeah.
Yeah.
He went flying.
Yeah.
Is LeBron the softest GM in the league?
Wow. Wow.
This is a hard ass. This guy's coach fired.
I saw one of the shows ask, does it affect his legacy that he's played for 10 head coaches? Mm. Does it?
I don't know. I mean, we just watched an entire documentary about how Jordan refused to play anymore once his coach was leaving. So, I mean, you know, I don't know. Does that damage his legacy?
No, because he's the greatest ever.
Right.
Wow.
It does not.
If you just operate from that premise.
Here we go.
If you just operate from that premise, then there's no debate to be had.
Correct.
Right.
It's not.
So we move on.
Yeah.
10 coaches is a lot.
I think it fits the bill.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he has to worry about his legacy. His legacy is what it is.
It is what it is.
He's a phenomenal player. Maybe the second best player ever.
Maybe the best.
But he's, you know, has a little bit of whiner in him.
Yeah.
Makes excuses sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not something you'd say.
Jordan definitely never...
You show
quit
me,
because his coach was leaving or threw a royal fit because they brought in a player he didn't like.
No, he retired for other reasons.
Well, he retired for other reasons then, but he quit. The last dance was because his coach was leaving. And he threw. And a lot of the documentary was about how pissy he was that they brought in Kukoc and they didn't like that. So he threw a big fit about that and mistreated him for a long time. So Jordan would, you know, but only LeBron's a whiner.
But he didn't do that in front of the cameras, though. He didn't. You don't have clips of Jordan nonstop saying, you know, if we just had our whole team healthy, you know. You just don't. Okay, those are reports that he was an a-hole to Tony Kukoc at practices and whatnot. People have covered him, whatever. But he didn't openly make excuses. He held himself accountable. That documentary, how many players said, you know, Jordan was the hardest working guy on the team because he expected us all.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
I mean, you don't
incredibly driven, motivated.
You don't hear those stories about guys playing with LeBron. You just don't. You don't hear guys that, you know, LeBron's outworking everybody to make look. He makes players around him better. There's no doubt about it. If you watch the game of basketball,
seems
you see
like
it.
He works hard. I mean, there's like to be in that type of shape at 40 years old
it
and everything
like
that
it.
He does. I don't know. I haven't monitored his practice habits.
I didn't watch that documentary and think less of Jordan. I thought more of him.
Right.
After
it was state-run media. I mean, it was his approved documentary. But I watched it and thought, the way you want to paint a narrative is you know, that was all to make, what's his name, was it Reinsdorf, whoever, the GM, look like the bad guy, and maybe he was.
Jerry Krause.
Krause, there we go. And maybe he was. I'm just saying, like, it's just, we hold up one guy. He's a bad guy because he's...
I think he holds himself up.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say what I said last week. A lot of his stuff is his own self-inflicted.
Haven't we compared Mahomes to Jordan a lot?
I think a lot of people have.
Are we worried that he's going to...
And how he takes things personally, and there were a lot of...
Yeah.
Correlation there between the way Jordan approached things and the way Mahomes approached things.
Counting nine fingers to the nine teams that drafted, you know, passed him up in the draft. Those kind of things.
I hope Mahomes keeps going here after Andy Reid's done.
Right. But why wouldn't
he? And I hope
he
keeps. I would like to see him do that.
I've never seen anyone more dismissive of someone that was so great as Michael Jordan than you.
I'm not dismissing him. I'm pointing out counterarguments to all the things that people do to trash LeBron. The things we trash LeBron for, somehow we give Jordan a pass.
Here's the thing. All these things can be true.
They're both incredible. They're both phenomenal. They're both unbelievable competitors, you know. And then maybe Jordan had more of a killer instinct than LeBron.
Maybe. See, that's where you lose credibility. We like those things, like maybe. There's no maybe about that. You could say that Jordan or that LeBron's a better athlete or a better all-around player if you want, but the killer instinct thing, I don't think there's a maybe there. Like, that's a huge argument in favor of Jordan. I mean, I don't know. You think that's really up for debate? Who had a better killer instinct?
I think it's a little bit of up for debate because I just go back to all the teams that LeBron played for and how far he got those teams. You know, I think that is something that gets undervalued. It's a team game. You know, he's hit a lot of big-time shots in his career. He's hit a lot of big-time shots. You know, I do think...
All right.
I mean, it's just... I think it's what makes for such a good debate because their circumstances are so different.
I don't think LeBron had the killer instinct that Kobe had.
No.
I mean, it's just an opinion. Yeah. I don't. And that's not saying he's a better player than Kobe, but different players are different, you know.
Yeah, no, that's fair. You know what? I actually, as stubborn as I'm being, I think I actually agree with you on that.
Like, I think...
Thanks for joining us on the Border Patrol today. Tune in tomorrow.
Like that, and it... Like, Mahomes has a tremendous killer instinct.
Unbelievable.
I think that's what separates
I think you were
him.
Talking, yeah, no so we're talking about different things, and I appreciate what you're saying with this, too, because... We're not talking about all the other things about LeBron and, you know, the embellishment of everything we talked about last week. It's about the killer instinct.
And, like, LeBron, his size, speed, athleticism combination is second to none.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You can't compare it to anybody. He's an athletic freak. And so, I mean, like, I could never make the argument that Jordan, you know, because he LeBron could, I mean, he could... play all five positions if you wanted to and do things that other guys can only dream about. So I think there's certain things about each player that make them unique that you really can't debate, but you can debate who is the better player. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. And how about me, you know, admitting.
You were being stubborn, but that's fine.
But
you saw the light.
Yeah. I do push back on the stuff when people try to trash LeBron for certain things because I do think there's a little revisionist history that goes on.
And
that's
I don't
all.
Necessarily think it's trashing LeBron if you say that Jordan just outworked everybody on his team and set an example, and therefore he could hold people accountable. I mean, that's not trashing LeBron, but LeBron just doesn't seem to do that.
I don't know where that's coming from, you saying that. I don't know.
I'm saying that documentary, every player that they talked to is like, Jordan outworked all of us. He was the hardest working player.
So when LeBron's done and commissions his own documentary, you don't think he's going to find teammates to say the same thing about him?
I'll be interested to see that. You don't. I mean, it's not a resounding, every person that plays with LeBron, just like, he's just outworking all of us. I mean, he's uber talented, and he's more talented than all of them. But is he,
I think that's really disrespectful to chalk up all the success he's had to talent and not hard work.
Look,
I mean, to
I
be
did,
as good as
I,
he's been
I
for as long
not
as he's
just
been.
Chalk up all
oh
of
my
his
God
to talent.
This is the argument that we've been looking for. Why have we not hit on this one?
What?
Nathan just said, tell Nate to stop wearing the Jordans then and start wearing LeBron shoes.
There you go.
Oh, my God. That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
You walk around wearing Jordans.
All the time.
Why?
If the debate is who has the better shoes, I'm with you. Jordans are way better. Yes, Jordan's shoes are way better. You got me on that.
Oh, my God. It's been right in front of us this whole time.
That's just... That definitely tells
what
you.
Shoes were you wearing when you got hurt on the Segway?
God, that's a good question. They weren't Jordans.
Well, see? There you go.
They weren't
probably,
LeBron.
Probably LeBron shoes. Right.
That's exactly it.
That foot's not broke if they're Jordans.
Sometimes I dream.
I will say the Jordan 4s were the one pair I had as a kid. They were the worst basketball shoes ever. They look great.
Wow.
They look great, but, man, they're terrible basketball shoes.
We'll be right back into this on WHB.